Hello, welcome everyone to the Legally Different podcast, the hub for soul-fueled success. Today's episode is really unique because it's all about money and investing. And whilst we've touched on these subjects before, we haven't ever had a dedicated episode about money. So I'm so excited to be joined by Seth Bradley, aka the Passive Income Attorney. Seth's mission is to help attorneys and busy professionals on their passive income journey so they can practice when they want to, not because they have to. I love that. So we have a really open conversation about money. Seth has so much wisdom to share, so much experience to share. So it's really interesting to listen to his journey and his insights. And he's really down to earth, so super easy to connect with. And I'm sure you'll take away a lot from this. It's really educational and really inspiring. So sit back and enjoy. Hello, welcome to everyone joining. Today I'm joined by Seth Bradley, who is, well, I don't even know where to start, a real estate entrepreneur, an expert in creating passive income, and a former big law attorney. Welcome, Seth.
Lauren, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's amazing having you on. Thank you. And You're tuning in from San Diego, isn't it?
Yep, sunny San Diego, California.
Amazing. Yeah, I can feel the sunny vibes already. It's 5 p.m. here in England and it's already dark. So,
yeah. I just got back from a real estate conference and folks from all over the country came to LA. And it's in the middle of January right now. I'm not sure when this is going to be aired, but it's 75 and sunny and people are like, oh, I can see why you want to live here.
Wow. How was the real estate conference? I think I saw on Instagram you post about it actually. Yeah,
it was great. It was actually pretty interesting because I haven't been to one of these things for a couple of years in person. Everything's been virtual and, you know, having the podcast and meeting people online like this through Zoom and through LinkedIn and Facebook and Instagram, and then actually seeing live bodies and putting them to the profile pictures was pretty interesting.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, it's a whole different game, isn't it? And nice to have that in-person contact as well.
Yeah, a lot of people are a lot taller or a lot shorter than you just kind of thought that they were just from their personality. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Cool. So, I've been following you for some time and I love the angle that you put on finance, investment, and your niche, really, passive income. It's in the name. And I've kind of been through my own journey, really, with my own financial mindset and unplugging, where I personally have been exchanging, only making money by exchanging my time for money, which is something no doubt we will dive into. But I'd love to start back at the beginning and would love to hear more about your background and why you initially chose to become a lawyer.
Sure. Well, I'll take it back pretty far just because I think it kind of provides some context for where I'm at today. I grew up in West Virginia. My mom is a retired school teacher and my dad is a retired coal miner. So really blue collar, just kind of got that trading time for money type of mindset instilled for me from an early age. So that's kind of why I started on my pathway to becoming a doctor first. So I went to medical school for a year and a couple of weeks into my second year before I dropped out, because I just realized right then and there it wasn't for me, but I had already made such a commitment that I stuck it out for a little bit, maybe too long, but finally got up the gumption to step away from that. And, you know, I still had that mindset though, you know, what's the next best job I can get? If I'm not going to be a doctor, then what am I going to be? I'm going to be a lawyer. So I went to law school after that, did pretty well there. Still kind of on that same mindset, trying to get the best job, trying to make the most money. So I went into big law, did that for 6 years. And that's where I started kind of during that time investing in real estate and kind of seeing some different writings on the wall as to, you know, not wanting to necessarily stay into that for the rest of my life.
Amazing. Thanks for sharing that. And I think a lot of people can resonate with that in terms of why they chose law or other similar careers. So what do you think your initial draw to big law in particular was when you pivoted away from studying medicine and then you went into law? What was the draw for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, you know, when I was in law school, that's what everybody wanted for the most part. I mean, there were other folks that had other pathways picked out that they thought they wanted to go down. But for a lot of people in law school, you know, we're all high achievers. We want to score high on our tests. We want to get first in our class, all those types of things. And, you know, I just wanted to reach that pinnacle, I guess, of the profession. And sadly, also money was a motivator as well. Again, you know, my parents, blue collar, I wanted to get the best job that I could possibly get. If I'm going to go to school for all this time, I'm going to go ahead and try to get into big law and make a lot of money and make partner and go down that pathway.
Yeah. So at what juncture did you start to think, maybe this isn't for me? Maybe when you started to rethink things, what was going on?
Yeah, there were a couple of things. I think the first one that hit me was, you know, seeing some of the older partners in the firm. You know, they're in their 60s, even their 70s, and they're still slaving away. I mean, they're still billing tons of hours on top of, you know, the administrative work, the educational work they have to do with the associates, all that sort of stuff. They're still at the office every single day, grinding away, and you're like, is that the goal? Like if I do everything right, if I don't make any mistakes, if I bring in the clients, if I bill 3,000 hours a year, I do everything right, one day I'm going to get to be like them, 60 or 70 years old, still at the office, still doing the same thing, except maybe some people look up to me a little bit more than they do now. So that was the first thing that hit me, was just like, that's the pinnacle. And that's not necessarily what I want to do. So I started looking at, you know, what else is there? You know, I've came all this way. I've got my law degree. I got the big law firm job. What can I do without just leaving the profession? For me, I was in real estate. I was in real estate law. So I started investing in real estate and then kind of went down that pathway, worked my way up. But we'll get into that. But that was the first thing. And the second thing was, what gave me the confidence to get into real estate was just, you know, meeting with clients, seeing that they're not Warren Buffett or somebody like that. They're regular people investing in real estate and, you know, huge deals. I mean, $50-100 million real estate deals. And they're regular people, just like you and me, doing these deals. It kind of gave me the confidence and the mindset shift that I could do it too.
Amazing. Love that. And I think we all kind of need that example to show it's possible in some ways, even if we know internally, hey, you know, we've got a ping that's the way to go or something. It's really inspiring to see that it is possible and can be done. So how did you begin to kind of unpick yourself, I guess, from big law life, like freeing yourself from the golden handcuffs and such? What was your process to doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that I dove right into the golden handcuffs. I mean, I put them on immediately. Like as soon as I got that big law job right out of school, I bought a brand new 550 BMW, you know, a car payment I didn't need. Bought a house that I didn't need, you know, things like that. I had a 4-bedroom house. It's like, I didn't have any kids, nothing like that. It was just, you know, cause you could. And that's what, you know, we're taught we're supposed to do. And even on top of that, I don't know if you had this conversation with anyone, but I've talked to some people and they've had this same ridiculous conversation where, you know, you start chatting about, oh, I'm thinking about buying a house, you know, and then the older folks at the firm are just like, yeah, you should buy the biggest house you could possibly afford. I mean, even if you can't afford it now, you're going to be able to afford it later and you'll grow into it. I mean, that's kind of the most ridiculous financial advice anyone's ever given me. Like that, like buy a house you can't afford now because you anticipate making more money later. That's terrible advice.
True. Yeah, you're right, actually. And it is kind of that old school mindset as well in terms of pouring everything into bricks and mortar, which to an extent is good, but yeah, not leave it, you know, the leverage is so heavy with that, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, I got into that, had all the big bills, had the mortgage, you know, had the car payment, those sort of things. And that's when I started having those kind of epiphanies that we talked about earlier. I started trying to figure out ways to invest outside of my 401k, like everyone does, and their retirement accounts if we're in a different country. But you know, you're typically taught to just invest in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, the market, things like that. Especially as like a busy attorney or a doctor or someone like that, where they have a retirement plan set up for you. I started looking at alternative investments. I've always been interested in real estate. I don't know where it came from. Again, from a blue collar family, we own the house that we lived in, but that's it. But always interested in real estate. So I started, like I think a lot of people do, they start seeing like an HGTV fix and flip and think that looks like fun. So I started there and started buying single family rentals. and created some wealth for myself. I mean, I don't suggest that now, because eventually that got me into trouble down the line, because as a busy attorney, you don't have time to do a fix and flip from 3,000 miles away and trying to manage a contractor and trying to manage property managers and things like that. You just don't have time for it. It eventually took away from my career to the point where I got fired. Now, this is way down the line. This is years later. But at the same time, you know, at some point, you just don't have time for that sort of thing. So I was able to break away from the golden handcuffs by creating other income streams that facilitated me being able to step away from, you know, billing all these hours and to actually pay for some of these bills until I could get them paid off and step away from my practice entirely.
Yes, so interesting. Thank you for sharing all of that. And yeah, it's interesting what you say about investing in property and doing a fix and flip, because I think that is most people's view of investing in property, isn't it? Turning around dilapidated properties, or maybe not so dilapidated, and sprucing them up. But you're right, even that is being sensible in the sense that it's invested in real estate and, you know, to the extent that is a sensible investment, but it involves the exchange of time and energy. And that is a project in itself, isn't it? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's still transactional, right? You're still trading time for money. You're still banking on yourself to do all the work, to manage all these folks, be able to get this project done. And that's fine. I think that, you know, the fix and flip and some of those more time intensive and transactional type of real estate opportunities are for some people. I don't think it's for attorneys. I don't think it's for doctors and engineers and people that have a really demanding career, because you just don't have the time and energy for it. I mean, that's something else, the energy. Like, maybe you have you can carve out some time in the evening, which does take away from your family and your hobbies and whatever else you want to do, but also your energy. I mean, you already expend so much energy at your job and your career, and then trying to add something else onto it, especially if maybe you don't love real estate. Maybe you just know it's a good investment vehicle and you want to be involved. It's even more taxing on your energy.
True. If the passion factor isn't there.
Right.
So what is the solution? Like, what did you move into? What did you work out that was the answer for you?
Yeah. The first thing I stepped into were quote unquote passive investments. And some people will try to sell you on passive real estate investing, and they'll present you with, you know, a fix and flip. And they'll say, oh yeah, once you get it fixed up and do all these things, then it's really passive. It's not. I mean, that's as active as it can possibly get. And I know that it's a spectrum from active to passive investing, but truly on the passive investing side, you can invest in commercial real estate. And when I say commercial, I mean, you know, office, industrial, self-storage, even residential, which is called multifamily in commercial real estate. And you don't actually have to do anything. I mean, all you have to do is really do your due diligence on who you're investing with. That's the biggest thing. Go through the property as well in the market. But really, you're doing your investigation on who you're investing with, who's actually going to be that active operational partner, purchasing and renovating and operating the real estate. But after that, you make your investment and then you get a return on your money. You don't have to worry about tenants, toilets, and trash and all that sort of stuff. You just make your investment, you set it and forget it, and you make a bet on basically the winning horse, the winning jockey. So that's what it comes down to. I think a lot of people don't know that you can do this. I think, again, they look at HGTV fix and flips or buying a single family residential house, something like that is the only way to get started. But for folks like us that, you know, have really good active income, I suggest you get into passive investments where it's not going to take away from your career and you can focus on creating more active income. And eventually those passive investments will be able to replace your active income and you can start billing less time and eventually retire early if you want to.
Interesting. And you've set up your own company doing this, haven't you?
Yeah. So, well, for myself, yes, because I'm on the active side now. So I do some active investing. But when I was doing passive investing, you don't necessarily have to do that. And that's one of the huge advantages to it. That's a huge thing, especially for attorneys. When you invest passively, your liability is completely only limited to your investment dollars. That's it. You're not going to get sued by, you know, a slip and fall or someone getting hurt on the property or, you know, something like that. You're limited to your investment. Whereas the active investors on that same deal, they are susceptible to liability, just like you would be if someone slipped and fell on your single family house.
True. Good point. Yeah.
So passive investing, you don't need to form, you know, an LLC or a separate company in order to invest in that because you have limited liability.
Hey, it's Lauren here. I hope you're loving this episode. Just a quickie to share that the supporter of this episode is Frank and Iris Blue Light Protective Glasses. I continually undertake a 360 health audit. And when I did this about a year ago, I realized an area I was not paying attention to was light hygiene and the health of my eyes, particularly in relation to the amount of tech use and the blue light which emanates from our tech. So one step I took to help that was buying a pair of blue light protective glasses. I chose to buy them from Frank and Iris because they are values aligned. One thing that stood out to me is the fact that for every pair sold, they buy a pair of reading glasses for someone in a developing country who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford them. So by protecting my eyesight, I'm also helping someone else with theirs, which I absolutely love. If you buy a pair of glasses from Frank and Iris, you can get 15% off with the code LEGALLYDIFFERENT15. That's LEGALLYDIFFERENT15 at the checkout. They deliver worldwide, and I believe delivery within the UK is completely free. So the link will be in the show notes, and that's Frank and Iris, FRANC, and Iris, IRIS.com. And yeah, head over, choose your favourite pair of glasses. They're very stylish, as well as protecting your eyes and giving back to someone in a developing country. Now let's get back into the episode.
And at what point did you create what you now call the passive income attorney, the name that you operate under? And I love your motto, practice when you want to, not because you have to. I love that. Where did that come from? Presumably like your journey and realizing all of these lessons.
Yeah, I think I saw a hole in the market. There are a number of folks out there that kind of do the same educational sort of thing for doctors, for dentists, for engineers, and no one goes for attorneys. No one has this educational platform for attorneys. I don't know if because we're a pain in the ass or what the problem is, or we ask too many questions, but no one wants to, you know, cater to the attorneys. And, you know, through trials and tribulations and, you know, doing all these different types of investments and then kind of finding the way that I believe works best for attorneys and busy professionals, that's where I decided, hey, I need to fill that void. I need to educate attorneys about these types of investments. And it's not just real estate. So I've been talking about commercial real estate syndications, but I also invest in, you know, crypto and franchises and e-commerce and all sorts of things. There's all kinds of ways to generate passive and sort of active income as well, depending on how much time and how much money that you have to invest.
Yeah, so you went right in there, the pioneering one, servicing the attorneys, the lawyers. Yeah.
No one else wanted to do it, that's for sure.
Here comes Seth, amazing. So how do you do that then? I know you've got a few different strands to the passive income attorney. You've got like your, where you try and educate attorneys and could you talk us through all these different things?
Yeah, so I mean, I use the podcast as an educational platform. At some point I may launch a course and, you know, that sort of thing to help people along that want to kind of move quicker. Haven't quite got there yet, but for now, especially for attorneys, you know, I open myself up to booking a call and let's talk about how much time, how much money do you have? How quickly do you want to step away? Some folks don't. I mean, that's the thing. That's why it's practice when you want to, not because you have to. Because some people, once they're able to bill less hours or they're not so dependent on that stream of income, they find that they don't necessarily hate their practice. Maybe it's something else. Maybe they're missing something else in life. It's not necessarily just that work-related thing. Mm. So as soon as you aren't tied down to it and you're able to provide for yourself and your family through other means, you're like, okay, well, I can keep this job. I like being an attorney. And that happens a lot more than you think. Mm.
Yeah, I can understand that actually, because being an attorney, a lawyer, it's so much more than the job. It comes with a lot of stress, a lot of plates spinning. There's so much going on. And definitely when I shifted the way I work as a lawyer from working in big law firm, doing the classic kind of traditional career, to consulting flexibly, doing significantly less hours, it made me realize, oh, it was never really the law I had a problem with. It was the way I was working. And I didn't know it at the time. I was just craving my own free time and having more freedom in my life and doing work in more of an empowered way, not because I was told I had to
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. As soon as that, you know, that have to restriction is removed, it just makes things a lot better. You're really seeking freedom and flexibility. Mm-hmm. That's really what you're seeking. If you're still able to practice law and have some more freedom with your time and flexibility with your time, then it makes it a lot more tolerable. Is not the right word. Maybe even enjoyable, because you're good at something. You've learned a skill that not a lot of people have, and you enjoy being good at that.
True. Yeah. And something you talk about, I love this phrase. I haven't heard it before, and I don't know why, but 9 to 5 until 65. Why do you think it is in society that a lot of us think that that is the only way to work?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's changing now, generation to generation. It's getting better. I think you see the younger generation seeing that that's not the only way. But I know that with my generation and with me, I grew up and that's all I knew. It's also geographically related to where I grew up. You know, if I grew up in California where there's more of an entrepreneurial attitude, it could have been a little bit different. But where I grew up, it was get the best job that you can. And that's 9 to 5 till 65, you know, work harder, put your head down and just provide for your family, that sort of thing. I know that mentality is not as prevalent as it was, but you know, we're still, even now, the younger generation still aren't taught, you know, to be an entrepreneur, to how to run a business. You know, as far as real life finances are concerned, they're not taught anything. You might be taught how to write a check, and that's about it. Well, maybe not anymore, but that's as far as I was taught, was how to write a check, and that was it. Mm. I mean, you're not taught how to, again, even in law school for attorneys, I mean, a lot of us go out on our own and we don't know how to run a business. We have no idea. I mean, they don't give us any sort of guidance on how to run a business, on how to be successful as an entrepreneur, how to lead a team, how to hire and fire and that sort of thing. We're just not taught real life financial and business skills.
So true. Yeah, like financial wellness. It should be a topic at school, shouldn't it? And skills, financial wellness and skills. Yeah.
Yeah. If anything, we're taught not to talk about it. We're taught not to talk about money. It's, you know, don't talk about how much money you make or what you spend your money on or anything like that. It's supposed to be all hush hush, but it shouldn't be. It should be an open conversation you have with people so that you can learn from each other. And that's kind of where you get that secondary private education from masterminds and coaching and, you know, watching YouTube and listening to podcasts, because people are a lot more open about their finances. Whether or not they're telling the truth or not, that's up to you and who you're listening to. But, you know, at least it's an open discussion as to, you know, learning about money and how the financial system works.
Yeah, great point. And yeah, because I think money is like quite an insular topic where a lot of your beliefs around money are formed around your family unit and household. So yeah, having those different sounding boards and sources of education is so important.
Yeah, I remember growing up and like my Uncle Bill would talk about, he was a used car salesman, right? So all he talked about was money. But like, you know, everybody else in the family was like, oh, Uncle Bill, he always talks about money. He shouldn't be talking about that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like I'm from a similar background to you, like a blue collar background. And definitely a lot, you've already touched on it, a lot of sayings around work hard for your money. Like that's how you earn it. You work hard for it. I definitely grew up with that belief for sure. And something you touched on earlier about younger generations, I think it's definitely changing. And I saw you shared like a meme about like the younger generations buying NFTs. I can't remember the meme was. Like, I'm just walking into my 9 to 5 knowing a 15-year-old just made whatever on an NFT. And it is pretty wild when you, think about that.
Yeah. I mean, some of this stuff is even hard to grasp. It's like you're selling like, you know, online photos for $1 million. It's crazy, but there's opportunities. They're out there. And I think that younger generations are on top of things. Hopefully, you know, they're figuring out they can get on YouTube and educate themselves, even though the traditional educational system isn't going to give it to them.
True. Yeah. And I think with attorneys and lawyers, going back to the 9 to 5 till 65 vibe, that's just compounded. Like whatever your background was in terms of money and financial wellness, well, when you're a lawyer, you just literally live on the clock and sit there and exchange your time. So it's like you don't have a fighting chance, because this, I mean, elements of it are changing, but the fundamental structure of law, practicing law, is so based on exchanging your time, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's like the, I mean, being an attorney that's billing time is like the absolute epitome of trading your time for money, because it's 0.6, you know, like you're trying to trade a tiny piece of your time for a piece of money. I mean, that's what it comes down to. We're not talking about like getting paid by the hour or getting paid by the year. We get down to the 0.6. I mean, it's crazy. Like,
yeah, it's pretty wild, actually. Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't think any of the profession does that. Maybe accountants do. I'm not sure.
Maybe accountants. Yeah. That's probably it. So we've got no chance. Once we get in there, we're just trained. We've got no chance.
Exactly. That's why everyone needs the passive income attorney.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Try to get away from that as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So if there's a lawyer listening and maybe they're still skeptical, after listening to this, then maybe they're thinking, oh, I just don't have time to even think about anything else, or I'm too long in the tooth now. I've been in this game for ages. It's all I know. What, I don't know, tip or share would you say to a skeptic or someone who just thinks they don't even have time to free up their time?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a couple of things there. I think attorneys think once they've been in law for so long, they can't do anything else. Maybe they're even too specialized in their practice. They can't even change their practice, let alone change the job or their career or what they do. But the way I look at it, you know, it means they have, if they're very specialized for one, they have a very specialized tool, and that tool is money. Maybe not necessarily time, but if they're very specialized, they probably make a good amount of money, which means you can create truly passive income streams, again, through real estate syndications is one way to get started. And I say that because it's so easy to get started. And then once you kind of open your mind up to those sorts of investments, there are other ones that you can get involved in later down the line. And there's just not much handholding after you make that first investment. And the other thing is, it's an exclusive club. It's expensive to get into these real estate deals, so not everybody can do it. You know, if you work at McDonald's or something, unfortunately, you're not going to have the capital to be able to get into these types of deals. But as a specialized attorney, you probably do. So it's, you know, it's an exclusive club. And the second thing there is, you know, attorneys, we have skills. And it's not just being an attorney. That are applicable across different businesses and really life in general. And we just don't give ourselves enough credit for it. You know, especially just the ability to think like a lawyer. I mean, to take a complex scenario and break it down into simple concepts is a gift. And, you know, the ability to see an argument or problem from both sides and through different lenses, we can take those skills that we've learned in our law career and apply them to other businesses, to investing, to relationships, and even just daily occurrences that we come across. And but that's, you know, that's only to a certain extent. Let's not try to win every argument with our significant other. But, you know, I think that it is, you know, it's a gift that we've been trained with to be able to see situations from various sides and through different lenses.
I love that. I love that perspective. And it's so easy to get caught up in being a lawyer and like a narrow view of it. But you're right. We have so many different skills and so much experience that is applicable to all of life beyond investing as well. So yeah, I love that. Thank you. Okay, well, we're getting towards the end of the questions that I had for you. I'd love to ask you two more, and these are two that I ask every guest.
Okay.
So the first one is, if you could go back and chat with a younger version of Seth, maybe before he even went to med school, what advice would you share with him that he needed to know then that you now have the benefit of?
Yeah, I would say this, you know, this could go back before med school, this could go back before anywhere down the line, but really get a mentor or get a coach. Maybe couldn't afford a coach back then, but, you know, get a mentor, somebody that's kind of got a lot of experience either doing what you want to do or, you know, just has a lot of life experience and you've seen that they've been successful in some pathway of life, whether that's their career, their job or business or relationships. And just keep that conversation and dialogue going. I think that's really, really important. I think, and it's tough because when you're young, you think you know everything. You want to do it all yourself. You're like, okay, I'm strong, I'm smart, I'm confident, whatever. I'm just going to do it myself. and that's great that you have that confidence, but at the same time, somebody else has already done it and somebody else has already made those mistakes that you're about to make if you don't open yourself up to dialogue and to feedback. And I think that's really important. So that's what I would say is get a coach, get a mentor, get someone that you can look up to that'll have those deep conversations with.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Thank you. Amazing. And finally, what makes you legally different?
Yeah, I think, you know, just in comparison to a lot of other attorneys, I was just able to see through the Wall Street lie. And when I say Wall Street lie, I mean that kind of 9 to 5 till 65, invest in your retirement account, invest in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. That's just dated thinking. That's just what they want you to do to keep you on the hamster wheel, to keep you working until you know you don't have much time left. And I took some risks and I invested in all kinds of real estate and alternative investments. I invested in restaurants, things like that. I invested in all kinds of things. Some of them worked, some of them didn't, before I figured out the ones that worked. And I think that, you know, because of that boldness, I'm able to now show other attorneys what works and what doesn't, especially specifically for attorneys, and ultimately just, again, help them practice when they want to, not because they have to.
Amazing. Love that. Thank you. Awesome. Well, that brings us to the end. How can people connect with you if people want to follow you, get in touch to work with you? Like what kind of offerings do you have at the moment? I'd love you to share those things.
Sure. I've got something called the Billables to Abundance Bible. It's specifically written for attorneys. You can download that at escapethebillable.com. Check that out, and that'll get you kind of into my email automations and things like that. So you can see some of my passive real estate deals as they come out. And also, I don't do this for everyone, but just opening my calendar up for calls with you guys, with other attorneys that want to talk, not just about real estate, but if you want to talk about some of the other investments that I have, so that you can kind of make a more educated decision on how you'd like to create your pathway to financial freedom, whether that's through crypto, real estate, franchises, e-commerce. There's so many different things that you can do. And, you know, not one pathway is the pathway for all. So it's good to kind of have that conversation and know what's out there. And I'll give you that link so you can drop it in the show notes.
Oh, thank you. That's so generous. Yeah. And like touching on the conversation before about like having a mentor or a sounding board, like that. Yeah, it's amazing that you're opening that up. So it'd be really useful for people to have conversations with you. And yeah, all of that sounds amazing. I'll link everything in the show notes. So awesome. That brings us to the end. Thank you so much, Seth. I've learned so much and it's been, yeah, really inspiring to talk to you about everything.
Absolutely. And thanks again for having me on.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So that brings us to the end of the episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. It means the world. As always, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to find out what you took away from that episode. Has it inspired you at all regarding your money mindset, regarding your passive income journey? Yeah, I'd love to hear. And as always, if you know you took away something from this episode and you think someone you know, a family member, a colleague, a friend would also benefit from listening to this episode, do feel free to share it with them. That's much appreciated. Thanks again for tuning in, and until next time.